Hello, welcome back to Tabu. My name is Katrina. I'm joined by Tom Athersich and Chris Bull. Guys, do you want to introduce yourself, Tom?
Sure. Tom, CFO of Tab London.
I'm Chris. I am the, or one of the managing partners of Hoxton Capital Management.
We've got the same format as last time. We were asking the top five questions you guys have been asking on pensions. We'll kick things off with question number one, which is simply, what is a pension?
Fine. So a pension typically is a vehicle to save for your retirement. So most people will accrue benefits into a pension or pay in money over the course of their lifetime, whether it be through contributions for their work or they're contributing to it personally. And then that pot should be used or will typically be used when they get to retirement for an income. Obviously, when you're working, you've got an income coming from your job. When you stop working, you need to replace that income, and that's the whole idea of a pension.
And does one usually contribute to pension monthly or yearly, or how does that
Yeah, I
work?
mean, it depends. So different people contribute in different ways. Typically, if you're doing it through work in the form of salary sacrifice, you give up some of your salary, and that will be put in pre, so there's no tax taken off of that, obviously, in the UK. And that's obviously quite tax efficient for higher rate taxpayers, even basic rate taxpayers. And that then gets put into your pension. Some people who maybe are self-employed or who earn significant sums during the year and want to top up their pensions to what they might contribute through work or through other means, and there are caps on what you can contribute. But they might choose to do it yearly. So they might choose to get to the end of the tax year and go, okay, actually, I've still got 20 grand of my, allowance that I can use. Therefore, I'm going to put £20,000 into my pension. So they might do it yearly. So you can do it both ways, really. Typically, work is done monthly because that's how you get paid through PAYE. And then if you're doing it yourself, it's typically more ad hoc contributions.
Most typical employment pensions as well, you'll have the employer also contributing on top of your own. So at the moment, the basic one is a 5% contribution from employees, and then employers will then top up that by 3%. So why it's fantastic is because, as you mentioned, Chris, you don't get taxed on the contribution you make yourself to the pension pot that you're building, but also you effectively get free money from your employer as well. So it helps you build this pot quicker, and saving for retirement becomes more meaningful.
Exactly. And the earlier, the earlier you can do these things, generally speaking, if you're 18, 19, 20, and you've got the option to start a pension, there's a lot of people that I know that, don't, and or not that I know too many 18, 19, 20 year olds, but when I was that age, didn't, and decided to, to not contribute. And it makes a massive difference. The earlier that you can do it, the compounding effect over time makes a huge difference. Those little amounts whilst invested, because don't forget you're getting growth on the amounts you invest as well, can really add up to a big sum later on down the line.
And how does one get the growth? So is it that I pay into a pension pot and they're actively working it, or is it just interest that's growing it? How?
Yeah, so in terms of how you grow the assets within the pension, so typically a contribution is made. And that would be a cash contribution. There's not an investment typically goes in unless you're more of a self-employed basis and you might decide, I don't know, to put your office in there or something like that. But that's a different subject. But typically, it will go in as cash. Then from there, with a lot of workplace schemes, you would typically, you on day one when you turn up, you get a sheet of paper in front of you with all the rest of your stuff on your joining pack, and you tick, I'm a cautious person, I'm a growth orientated person, I'm kind of in the middle, and from there, Aviva Standard Life, whoever it is, Fidelity, will then place you into a set of funds linked to your risk appetite. Now, also, what a lot of companies do now is they do what we call lifestyle schemes. So they will invest it more aggressively when you're younger because you've got longer to go. And then as you get closer to retirement, they'll put it in more cautious assets. And the assets that they're typically going to be investing in, especially with workplace pension schemes now, are funds. They'll either be tracker funds, so they'll track an index, which is typically quite low cost, or they will be more actively managed funds, and you'll have a fund manager who will sit there, and he, given the mandate of what he's meant to be invested in, so it might be US equities, so he will then go and buy US equities, the best ones that he thinks with his team, and they will hold that in the fund, and that's where you'll get your growth from. So it allows you to diversify across a range of different companies as opposed to be in one entity. So, let's say you wanted to buy a US tech fund, instead of going just to buy Amazon, and being at the mercy of whatever happens to Amazon, you might own 50 different tech funds. So where some might not do so well, some might do so well. And also you're relying on the expertise of the fund manager as well, who, you know, typically has got a lot of experience in doing that, and you would hope would be able to get better returns than you might potentially do yourself.
Would you say overall the pension contributions you're making are secure to these people?
Yeah, I mean, look, pension schemes now are a far cry from what they were in the 80s and 90s. You know, pension regulation is extremely tough now. You know, no longer can, you know, we've seen some horrendous investments over the years in pensions, and that's generally where they fall down. Pension schemes are very safe and secure in themselves, just the way that they're structured. It's typically the underlying assets that people invest in, which, you know, can be slightly different, you know, i.e. if you want to go and buy a hotel room in, you know, the BVI or somewhere, you know, like, it's clearly going to be a risky investment for anyone, whether it's for your pension or not. But some people try and do that, and that's why pensions have got a bad name. Investing in funds run by big asset managers, it's highly, highly unlikely that you're going to lose all of your money.
Great. If we go on to question number two, which is how do pensions work? We briefly touched on how the growth side of it works, but kind of where do we start? How do I make these contributions monthly? Can we go through what's the difference between SAPS, SIPS, SAS?
Yeah.
All of those kind of acronyms.
Fine. So where do you start with a pension? Well, I mean, you know, normally that your pension will start, like I said, you know, Tom or the CFO of the business will have arranged a pension scheme for the employees within the scheme, if it's an employee-led one. Or you will have gone to someone like AJ Bell, Hargreaves Lansdowne, Fidelity, Standard Life, and set up your own personal pension. And we'll come on to the different types in a minute. But ultimately, you will have a pension vehicle set up from you from day one. It's not a difficult thing to do if you're doing it yourself. So if you want to set up a side one, it's relatively easy. I think with AJ Bell, I think it's like 8 or 9 questions and you can get going on it. It's very, very easy to do on their platform. And then obviously, if Work's taking care of it for you, good old Tom's done all the work for you. So that's good.
Where it becomes more important is if you're not in a workplace scheme. If you're, as the gig economy is growing, people are Uber drivers, Deliveroo, that sort of thing. Those people who want to put money aside for their future, they need to think about setting something up themselves. I think that's quite important. And also, people don't, it's not the forefront of their mind. They're trying to make a living, and it's quite difficult to put aside some of that disposable income, set it aside for the future.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, in work, you would typically, you know, it's not, you're not putting 50% of your salary away each month, but, you know, 5-10% is, you know, is wise. And actually having it, you know, most of these companies now as well will let you set up standing orders and things like that. So, you know, actually to be able to, you know, have it come off, that what I always say to people is don't send it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's make sure the payments are automatically coming out, like, you know, a car payment or whatever it is. You know, it's funny you say, you know, people find it tough, but people are quite happy to go and spend £350, £400 a month on a car, but they're not necessarily, absolutely, you know, too happy to do that for their future. And it's very important.
Presumably with the kind of ones you might set up yourself, is there kind of a fee that's associated with it?
No. So there'll be an ongoing annual management charge, but look at like someone like AJ Bell, they'll manage it for 0.25%, which is very, very, very cheap. You know, for them to run the pension for you, you know, and you can get it for literally nothing, super easy to set up, all online. You don't have to talk to anyone or doing anything, and you can literally just set and forget it. I think people kind of ear away from it sometimes because they think it's a bit overwhelming for them, but there's so many different platforms now. Maybe, I don't know if you put links in there or something, but send you over some links, and you can list out the ones that we not recommend, because we can't obviously give advice to each individual, but these are ones that are worth considering.
That's great.
As you move from employer to employer, because gone are the days really where you start work when you're 21 or whatever, post uni, or even when you're 16-17, you work for an employer for 40 years, then you retire and you've got this one pension. I mean, I've been with a number of employers and I've got a number of pensions. I mean, is there an efficient way of tracking that? Should I consolidate them? Should I let Aviva and Friends Life, or I think maybe became Aviva, should I let all of these different parties keep those individual pots, or should I bring them under one umbrella? I mean,
yeah, I mean, look, my general rule with this is some people think diversification, but you can get diversification. The biggest risk is not diversification within a scheme, because like I said, if you invest in a fund, you can diversify, you know, the fund will be diversified in itself. The biggest risk is exactly what you said, which is losing track of them. if you work for 10 different companies and you lose one of them, that's as good as it, you know, going, you know, it's done. You're not going to get it back if you forget about it and you don't know where it is. So, you know, ultimately, I would always encourage people to consolidate. So there's two types of pension scheme. There's a defined benefit scheme, which is a final salary pension, and we'll come on to this in a minute. And there's defined contribution schemes, which are the new norm. And they're what most employer schemes will and employee schemes will be now. Getting them all into one fund is relatively easy. In fact, like I said, with AJ Bell, you can, you know, just go on, enter the schemes, they'll do all the work for you, and then it will just arrive back into your new pot all as one. So having them all in one pot is definitely sensible.
And you kind of mentioned, so, you know, say I do lose a pension, where's the first start to try and where might one go to try and find out where it is?
So normally I would say, if you want to do it yourself, so there's obviously two options, do it yourself or employ a financial advisor to do it. Now, if you'd employ a financial advisor to do it, it's, you know, there's a cost associated with it. So it just depends upon how long you were there and how big the pension is. But if you want to do it yourself, the best way to start is always to contact your HR department, and they will be able to tell you who the pension scheme was with. The other thing that you can do is you can go on to HMRC's website, and they don't offer a pension tracing service, as in you can put in your national insurance number and it will find the pension. But what they do offer is you can write the name of the company that you worked for, and it will tell you who the pension scheme is with. So then you can then call up Standard Life Aviva, you know, they'll give you the contact details there as well. And then you can then contact them, give them your national insurance number, date of birth, address, name, and then they will be able to locate you and say, well, this is your pension, you know, and send you the information over that you've got.
Is that a recent thing? I mean, could I go back? I mean, not that I've been working for 30 years, but could someone go back 30 years and find a company that's now defunct, dissolved?
Yeah, all on there. I mean, if you paid into a pension scheme, a pension scheme does not sit, as you know, on the company's balance sheet. It sits completely separate, unless it's obviously a defined benefit scheme. But the assets are held in trust, and you know they're not the company's assets. So even if the company has gone bankrupt, and let's say it's a defined contribution scheme, the pension scheme will be there floating around still. It might not be with the same provider it was 30 years ago, but it will be there.
Sure, understood. Okay.
Yeah, can we just kind of touch on the SAS, SAP?
Yeah, of course. So, so you've kind of got ISA, SIP, SASs. So, you know, an ISA is not a pension. An ISA is a investment vehicle that you would contribute into, and the growth is tax-free. So each year you're allowed £20,000 to contribute into an ISA. It's a complete waste of your time contributing to an ISA if you have got, if you're putting into a fixed deposit, because obviously at the moment you're not getting any return anyway. So unless you've got hundreds of thousands of pounds, but you know, you can't really do that in one go anyway. Mm-hmm. I would always encourage people to contribute to stocks and shares ISAs. I think especially if you're holding it for the longer term, it's much more efficient. And like I said, it's tax-free. So any growth, if it grows from 20 to 40, you're not going to get taxed on that 20 gain that you've got.
Just to break that down, so the difference in the two ISAs are the normal ISA, where they give you a
cash
fixed
ISA,
coupon rate, which will be 0.5% or even 1% if you're lucky.
Really lucky.
Whereas the stocks and shares ISA, even if you go in there and buy a relatively low risk sort of index, some sort of FTSE 100 tracker, for instance, you're still more likely to get a 4-5% return
over the longer run.
Yeah, exactly. As opposed to, so that's the difference between the two, in case people don't know.
Definitely. And yeah, no, I think it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, investing for the short term is always risky. Markets can go up and they can go down, but generally speaking, over the longer run, volatility tends to eradicate itself from most financial markets. Because if you think over a 20-year period, if you have a look at pretty much over every 20-year period, since the end of World War II, markets have made money. They haven't lost money over that whole 20-year period. But over a one-year period, they're up and down all over the place, like we saw last year. A SIP is a self-invested personal pension. And a SIP is more geared towards individual investors. So in this whole gig economy, we often speak with pension companies and, you know, a SIP from what many people 20, 30 years ago were used to what a SIP is today are two completely different beasts. A SIP initially was brought out for you to be able to hold investments that might not fit the norms and funds and things like that. You might hold commercial property, you might hold, I don't know, loan notes, whatever they were, you could hold that within your SIP. Then the mainstream SIPs came out, the AJ Bells, the Hargreaves Lansdown, and they just packaged it nicely so that you could open a pension, a SIP, and they would put an investment platform inside of the SIP, and then you could invest off their investment platform into mutual funds, stocks and shares, bonds, ETFs, a whole host of investments, and made it very easy. So yeah, a SIP is more what you're used to, but it's not the same as it was. As mm-hmm. as most things, it's evolved, and that's what most self-employed people would probably have. And then you've got SASSes, which are few and far between now, I would say, and probably less applicable to most people. Now you have to have an actively trading company to open up a SASS. It's more geared towards small companies mm-hmm. For them to be able to have almost like a group pension scheme. But yeah, a SIP would predominantly be used today.
And what would you say the sort of core differences are between sort of a stocks and shares ISA and I guess a SIP from the same provider investing in roughly the same things? Obviously there's the commercial property, which you wouldn't get through an ISA. I mean, what would you say the core differences are?
Well, they're the same. So let's take AJ Bell. I keep going back to them. I'm not trying
yeah,
to
not sponsored
them
anyway. By AJ
shape,
Bell.
Exactly. Just, shame, anyway, shape form. But I think they're particularly good and they make it particularly easy. But they have a dealing account, and a dealing account is an investment platform. An ISA or a SIP is a wrapper that will go round that dealing account. So you can invest in exactly the same thing in your ISA and your SIP, but it's just how it's treated for tax purposes. So a SIP is obviously a pension, which typically you can't take to your 57 now for people of our age. A ISA you've got immediate access to, but theoretically you can invest in exactly the same things across the two. So there's no restrictions. So if I wanted to own Tesla shares in my ISA, or I wanted to own Tesla shares in my SIP, I could do so mm-hmm. on the same platform. There's no real difference in terms of the high street ones that you
sure. Other than effectively being taxed on the way, and you get the tax relief immediately for
exactly.
investing through the pension,
exactly.
the SIP, and then lifetime ISA. That's another initiative that's come out, I think, relatively recently, where you can contribute 4,000 a year as a limit, but then the government will top it up by 25% and give you an extra 1,000. So it behaves the same way as an ISA. As far as I'm aware, correct me if I'm wrong, the only difference is you can't withdraw it. Or if you do withdraw, you have to give back that 25% that the government's given you, and also any gains you've made on that throughout the course of that extra funds being within the ISA.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing, the lifetime ISAs have been introduced because they've slowly taken away the amounts that you can contribute into a personal pension. Or into pension scheme. So the annual allowance limit into a pension scheme now is £40,000 per year, or if you earn £30,000, the maximum you can contribute is £30,000. But years ago there was no cap. People could put hundreds of thousands of pounds into these things with no caps, no lifetime allowance limits or anything else like that. So they've had to bring in things like this lifetime ISA to make it more attractive for investors and to give them some different options as well.
Is there a gut feel for the best combination of having like a workplace but also topping that up with an ISA or a lifetime ISA?
I'm a financial advisor, so I'm going to tell you to put as much money as you possibly can into it, because I really do know the importance of it later down the line. Like I said, £350 on a car now, or really living hard up in retirement and not being able to do what you want to do. And I've seen that with various different people. I know exactly what I would be doing now, and what I'm telling them, what I'm setting up for my children, and what I'm actively encouraging the guys that work for me to do. I would always say contribute as much as you can to your pension now, because you will, you will reap the rewards of it later.
Cool. Well, if we move on to question number three, which is how much is a state pension?
Yeah, so a state pension, the state pension is interesting in how it works. So a state pension is typically, you typically contribute to that for your national insurance contributions. So you have to have qualifying years now of national insurance contributions. So the full state pension is 35 years of qualifying national insurance contributions, and obviously your employer, and you pay it for your wages, or if you work on your own, you pay voluntary, or you would obviously pay including your tax at the end of the year, but that will count as long as you've got a full year as a qualifying contribution. The full state pension at the moment is £179.60 per week, and it's paid weekly. Which amounts to £9,339 per year.
So that's how much the government will pay me when I retire?
Yes, it depends on how many qualifying years you've got, as you mentioned. I think the minimum is 10 years at least to get something. And then the maximum you can get is, as you mentioned, just under £180. But that's if you've done 35 years. And I think the way they calculate it is they will prorata the total. So if you've worked for 11 years, you qualify, but then they'll give you that extra year's worth of the weekly allowance, working out on a prorated basis, all the way up to the maximum of 35 years.
And is it wise to kind of go and, you know, put a portion away to try and top it up so you qualify for the 35 years?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
are there other solutions that you might do with the money to maybe, I don't know.
You can voluntary pay.
Yeah.
And you can make voluntary contributions if you have gap years. So we deal a lot with people that have lived overseas. And obviously living overseas, you don't typically pay a national insurance contribution. So some people can have 10, 15 year gaps and you can pay when you're abroad voluntary contributions. So we always encourage that. You've got to look at what it means for you. Ultimately, each individual is different, but I would always say, having a full state pension is definitely not a bad thing. It's highly unlikely. They might push the age out from where it is at the moment, which I know is one of the next ones, but they might push the age out. You know, it might be 70, but if you think of it, you know, average life expectancy in the UK for a male at the moment is 80. And it's 83 for a lady, according to the Office for National Statistics. So, you know, if you're getting it and receiving it from 67, that's 13 years of income that you know that you've got. If you're a husband and wife, you know, it can tot up quite nicely. If you've both got the full state pension, you know, it's definitely worthwhile having. And, you know, there's some people might argue with this, but I would say there's no sturdier institution than the UK government. I would definitely say it's worthwhile contributing.
Great. And if we move on to question number 4, which is, what is a pension credit?
So this is actually something that people don't take enough advantage of. It's a lesser known area of pensions. So how I understand it to be is people who are receiving a pension or of pensionable age, retirement age, are receiving whatever they've been able to save and push into the pension pot over their years of working. However, sometimes it's not enough for everyone to live on. So there is an initiative. It's been split between savings and guaranteed credit. Savings was if you hit pensionable age by April 2016, and now it is the guaranteed credit system. But if you are a single person or you're a couple and you fall below a certain threshold, I think that's £177 for a single, £270 for a couple per week, then this incentive will top you up to those amounts so that you can have a minimum sort of living standard, effectively. That is how the pension credit works.
Awesome.
Yeah, great. Should we move on to final question? Can I cash out my pension?
Yeah, so yes and no, I think, is the answer. I mean, technically under the Pension Freedoms Act that was introduced, you can cash out your pension. So when you get to retirement age, if you so wished, you can take out all of the pension money at once. Dependent upon your tax situation, I don't know whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, but we'll come on to that in a minute. But yeah, technically you can cash out of all your pension. You might be able to get hold of it earlier as well, if you're in ill health, terminally ill. Sometimes your pension company will allow you to access it earlier. If you've got a final salary pension, they might start paying it out to you earlier. But if you're 40 and you want to take all of the money out of your pension, it's highly unlikely that your pension trustees will let you. And if they do let you, then there'll be a huge tax bill to pay. So it's definitely not worth it. It's designed, and you know, the reason why you've received tax relief on the way in is because it's designed for your retirement.
Are kind of ways where I could cash it out earlier. But do they still come, so you mentioned kind of if you're terminally ill, which is probably not a very nice position to be in, but there we go. If you cash it out, you can cash out earlier, do you still have those tax bills, or is it just dependent on the situation that you're in?
I mean, if you're terminally ill, then there would be no, you would just pay your typical income tax on the way out. It depends. However, and it's quite a complicated area. However, if you are, if you if you just wanted to take it out to go and buy a new car, then, you know, like I said, number one, the pension company are unlikely to let you do that. And then number two, if they do, you'll be slapped. I think it's like 55% tax bill. So you don't want to get that.
No.
So we've spoken about contributing at the beginning of someone's working life and then all of the various different investment options you've got throughout. So now you've been working for 30, 40 years, depending however long it's been. What are the options? I've got this nice little pot of money. Do I buy an annuity, which is the sort of the traditional way of getting that fixed income in, or it might not be traditional, I don't know, but fixed income, or now this lump sum. So this has come out in the last few years, taking 25% tax free. How do they work?
You could always take out 25% tax-free. So when you start your pension, historically, when you started your pension with a final salary pension, it was what's called a pension commencement lump sum, PCLS. And you could give up to a maximum of 25% of the income and exchange that for a lump sum, and the lump sum would be tax-free. Now we've moved away from those kind of instruments. You've now got a pot. So let's say you've got a £100,000 pot when you retire. You can take out, when you get to retirement, 25% of that tax-free. So £25,000 can be paid to you on day one in your bank account. You also, with a lot of pensions as well, you can spread that over a number of tax years. You might take £5,000 now, £5,000 later, you know, £5,000 the year after, that kind of thing. But ultimately, you've got that tax-free lump sum, and it's you need to decide what you want to do with it. Now, again, if you've got a pot and you're drawing from the pot, if you take out a big lump sum at the start, you're going to have less of a pot for later on. So if you're taking it out to go and blow it on unnecessary things, then it's probably not the best idea. But it's there if you really need it. And then you go into what we call drawdown phase. So that's where you start taking money from the pension. And when you go into drawdown, you've got two options, as I see it. You've got what's called an annuity, which is a fixed income stream that you can purchase. I don't personally believe annuities offer very good value in low interest rate environments. The amount you receive from them aren't very good. An annuity is a income contract given to you by an insurance company. Insurance companies make lots of money, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing, but they're more geared in their favor. It's like going to a casino, the house always wins. To get the full value of annuity, with previous contracts that we've looked at, people would have to live until they're 96, which, given the average life expectancy is 80, there's a clear they're clearly gonna win off that. The other option is to go into what we call flexible drawdown, which means you can take as little or as much from the pension scheme as you wish. Now, most people, that's your drawing from the pot. So if you've got £70,000 left and you choose to take £7,000 a year from it, you don't get any growth. Let's say you would take 10 years to take the rest of the pot. Ultimately, though, a lot of people use flexible income now as part of the pension freedoms to withdraw all of the money from their pot on day one, which is why you might have seen a Daily Mail and things like that, people using their pension pots to buy Lamborghinis. And
I was going
to
say, there are no protections in place, because me as a 70-year-old man, hopefully retiring, looking to live out the remaining 15, 20 years of my life, hopefully, if I go out and buy that Lamborghini, then I'm out of cash and then relying on state pensions and credits and stuff.
So, you don't have to receive financial advice before you draw down from your pension. The pension company will always ask you, have you received financial advice, and obviously there'll be a load of disclaimers to protect them, and if you do start ripping money out. But no, under the pension freedom rules, there is no rule. You know, the main reason for that is because the government have seen that if you're savvy enough to save for your pension during your lifetime, then you're savvy enough to kind of draw out from it. Now, I don't necessarily think that's a great idea, however, you can do that, and there's no kind of protections in place to stop people being stupid with it, per se.
I suppose also with the lump sum as well, timing, or even the drawdowns, timing is crucial, because if you think back to Q1 last year, 2020, when the FTSE 100 and most markets fell off a cliff during Corona, then if you had a £100,000 pot in January and you wanted to take a lump sum, then by March you're probably only about 55-60% of what that pot was.
Yeah.
So planning those drawdowns based on market predictions, which is a finger in the air for most people, How do you advise people on timing of drawdowns?
It's difficult for timing, and I think that's the key when you were going to, you know, we was kind of staying with these lifestyle pots that you wouldn't be invested 100% into equities when you got to retirement, or you shouldn't really anyway, unless your pot's that big, the market fluctuations you can ride it out, i.e. you've got a few million pound in there and you're taking out £50,000 a year, okay, it's dropped off, but you're not, you know, the amount you're taking from the capital is not punitive over the longer run. So, you know, ultimately, I think you do have to bear it in mind. But when you are getting up to retirement, typically you'll be in more fixed income style investments that will give you will be less volatile than maybe more speculative investments, and therefore, you know, that kind of timing issue becomes less of a worry. But it is a real issue, and it's, you know, it's something that you need to look, it's something you need to look at, and you need to understand.
And you know what, we reach kind of the age of retirement, but what happens if I die? What happens to my pension?
So with a defined benefit pension, in the trust deed it's typically stipulated how much of the income will be passed on to your spouse. It could be 60% of the income, could be 50% of the income. A child's pension might be payable up until typically the age of 18 or 23 if they're in full-time education. With a defined contribution pension pot, whatever is left in the pot can be left to whoever you like. You name your beneficiaries in your expression of wishes when you complete the application, or you can change them as you're going through, and the pot will be left to them. It doesn't sit in your estate for inheritance tax because it's a pension, it sits outside. And then they would just be labelled as beneficiaries and they would receive the pot. So if there's £100,000 in there, they'll receive £100,000. Interestingly though, if you die before the age of 75, your beneficiaries do not attract any income tax on that. So when they come to draw from the pension, they can receive it effectively all tax-free. So if there's £100,000 in there, they can take it all tax-free. If you die after the age of 75, it's applicable to their marginal rate of tax as they come to take it out. So therefore, you would expect them to draw, you know, not as one lump sum, maybe as, to continue the pension on an ongoing basis.
And that's for all pensions, not just the private ones you set up. I mean, the state pension obviously doesn't.
Yeah, for your workplace pension scheme, so yeah. So for your defined contribution workplace pension scheme, that's how it will work.
Even if you bought an annuity?
No. So
an annuity, that's different.
An annuity is as it's set out in the annuity. So, but you, at that point, you wouldn't have the pension. So let's say, for instance, you buy an annuity. In the annuity, when you set it up, you've got a couple of options. You can either have a single life annuity or you can have a joint life annuity. And a joint life annuity means if anything happens to you, then, you know, I'm your partner, it goes over to me. Ultimately, with that, though, it might be 50%. So I get 50% of the income, and if I pass, then, you know, the money goes back to the scheme. But the pot is not yours then. If you've got a £100,000 pot, you've given it to the annuity
company. Sold it for that in exchange for the annuity.
Exactly.
Get it. Okay.
And final question, are you able to collect your pension and still work?
You can collect your pension and still work. You are able to do that, yes, indeed. It's maybe not the best thing to do in terms of tax, because if you're a higher rate taxpayer and you're collecting your pension, then you're going to lose 40% of it. So that's why, you know, you defer it for that tax saving later down the line. But yeah, you, in theory you could, but not that I would maybe say that's the best use of it. But yeah.
And just going to Hoxton Capital, how do you work with pensions and what can you do to?
Yeah, so we typically help people set up pensions. We typically help people consolidate their pensions and get them to work hard for them. The key with retirement is having a plan, like anything in life. And this is why I think pensions have probably got a bad name over time, is because people don't have any plan and expect their pension to look after them. But if you haven't paid any attention to it on the way through, then, you know, how do you know it's going to look after you in retirement? So you need to have a plan. And our first course of action that we would do with anyone is help them understand, okay, well, you know, it's great you're building up this pension pot, but is it enough? Do you know how much you need in retirement? So the first step is helping them understand what they need to sustain their lifestyle in retirement. Is it £2,000 a month? Is it £10,000 a month? Is it £50,000 a month? I don't know. Helping them understand that, then working it back and helping them understand what level of pot they'll need, and then helping them maximise the growth on the way through from them contributing to their pension and making sure that it's enough for them to retire on later down the line.
Great. Well, thank you both for joining me today. That's been Tabu Pensions Podcast. Make sure you like, subscribe and share and leave any comments in the box below. See you next time.